Hello, everybody. I'm Margot Coatsworth. This is Ask Margot, the show where you can send in any questions you have about life, about love, about your health, wealth, happiness, relationships, or anything else that's keeping you feeling small or stuck or sick. That's what this show is here for, and my mission is to help you find a solution. The show is here also because it is a place where I would like to think you'll always find not just answers, but encouragement. We have some questions today, and there are answers. Questions about how to help a child make a decision, about starting your own business, about how to work with people you don't really like, and how to get some romance back in your relationship. Also, whether there is such a thing as the one. I was listening to a mother the other day trying to help her child make a decision, a choice about something or other, and she had a clever way of doing it, which I thought was really kind of cool. She got the child to toss a coin, or she tosses it for them, and heads means one decision and tails obviously means the other. And she said, you can always tell by their immediate reaction after the coin is tossed whether that was the decision they really wanted. Or if you see disappointment on their face, it means they really did want to make the other choice. If they're happily accepting whatever their heads or tails turns up, then that was the choice they wanted. I haven't tried this, but I can see it working well, maybe even for adults to make a right choice who are stuck on whether to choose A or B. It sounds like it could be silly, but I think that what it does is push people along in the decision-making process, and it brings up what they're really thinking, helping them to tune into their instinctive feelings about the choice they want to make. Sometimes when people say, oh, it's so complex, a situation, for example, and there are so many layers and so many things to unravel around personalities and what's going on and what's being dealt with, but I don't think so. Sometimes I'll speak up and say, I don't think it's that complicated. You just peel the layers back and underneath you see a kind of kernel, which is the core of the issue. In terms of the subconscious work I do, underneath everything that's an issue in someone's life, there's a subconscious program that's been running, dictating their progress, their health, their relationships, or their perception of themselves. Underneath, pretty much all the time, is a simple feeling, something in their lives that made them feel a particular way, which has then caused them to believe something about themselves. The kernel that of this, at the heart of it, is mostly an unmet need. They may have felt unloved, they may have felt unseen, they may have felt insignificant, unworthy, unappreciated, unimportant. All of those things, they all turn up. They're expressions of an unmet need. Often people don't know what the subconscious programming really is in their lives unless they do some deep discovery work. But we all know if we have felt in the past that we weren't loved as we should have been, that we weren't recognized as we should have been, that we weren't valued as we should have been, and that may leave us now feeling that we're not quite enough. That's a ghastly thing, and it does hold people back from enjoying life fully. Or it can even ruin your life if you don't get a handle on it. I have seen that with my clients. I always say, how can you fix something if you don't know why it showed up? Find the reason, fix it, and live life without the fallout from these things that may be sitting in your past. I often talk about the foundation we have in our lives. You cannot build a fantastic building, strong and high and true, on a dodgy foundation. And our self-belief and our subconscious thinking is that foundation. We owe it to ourselves to make sure our foundation is strong and true. and to get rid of any rubbishy stuff that's going on that undermines whatever it is we want to build in our lives and of our lives. You can always contact me at margotunlimited.com under the contact tab if you need help with any of this. I like to say I don't do talk therapy, I do change your life therapy. Because as my children would say from some skit or other they'd seen, ain't nobody got time for that. Okay, on to our questions for the day. Today we have a question from Oliver who says, sometimes you just don't like people. Sometimes I have to engage with people at work who I don't like or respect. I don't even trust them. But it really isn't any good for them to know that as I have to work with them. How would you handle that, Margot? My general approach, Oliver, is to hold to the belief that I like everyone and therefore everyone will like me. I think it's kind of irresistible to people if you like and appreciate them, for them not to then like you back. You can actually do this even if you don't really like them. It's a decision and a choice. Now, you may say that's ridiculous and it might sound like that, even a bit to me as I'm saying it, but stay with me and let's see where we can go with this. It does not mean you have to spend more time with them than you absolutely must, and you don't have to share any of yourself. But you can decide to be gracious and civil and even to smile. Not a fake smile, it must be a real one. I find a compliment goes a long way. It makes people drop their defences and they become a bit softer and more responsive. It can be the simplest thing. You did great work on that project. I appreciate your input. Great suit. Thank you for that contribution. That kind of thing. If someone is likely to do or say something that's off, just have your guard up when you're around them and don't stay in their space any longer than necessary. Smile, say thanks, and leave. If you don't trust them, put everything in writing. Cover yourself. That's good business practice for everything, every time, regardless of how you feel about them. If you would benefit from having another person around, like a kind of secret witness, do that too. If you have a conversation, then put it in writing. Keep it unemotive, just factual, and send them a copy. Something like, thanks for today's conversation about blah-de-blah. I've noted your opinion about blah-de-blah, that it shouldn't proceed, and I will bring this up at our next meeting. What do they say? Keep your powder dry. I know that's an old-fashioned term, but I looked it up. And it means to be calm and ready for a possible problem in the future. If you're up for it, Oliver, you could try a little experiment in your power to change things in your world, which is to see if you can change the relationship with them, i.e. the way you feel about them, by changing the way you view them. That comes back to the idea I talked about in an earlier episode. Make the first thing you say to yourself not, oh no, here comes so-and-so, but I salute the divinity in you. You will find that removes the toxic feeling and makes you feel calmer and less reactive. I do that, and it does work. Remember, it's the boomerang effect. You decide what you send out, and that will inform what returns to you. They don't have power over you. You have power that you can employ if you choose to. I think it's exciting, really. Remember the idea that whatever people offer you, you have the choice as to whether you will receive that or not. Just as much as you have the choice about what you will project to others. I'd be interested to know how that goes for you. Our next question is from Owen, who was talking to me the other day, and he said that he really wanted to get ahead and be working successfully for himself. His current work was erratic and unreliable, and he was a bit lost as to how to make the kind of progress he wanted to in order to support his family. He told me he had a good work ethic and good ideas, but that he lacked certainty around what to do and how to make steady, good money from it. He said he got quite annoyed with people who said it was easy when his experience was that it wasn't. He wanted some advice. If you haven't got positive ideas people in your life that you can roll some thoughts around with, then my absolute go-to at the moment and probably right out into the future is AI, Owen. It can be as simple as asking the question, I have these skills, da-da-da-da-da, and I want to achieve da-da-da-da-da. Can you help me to come up with some suitable ideas for a business that will allow me to make more money than I do currently? If you have a concept all ready to go, Owen, go right in there and say something as simple as, can you work up this as a business concept for me? It's actually huge fun doing this. Simply plug in all the relevant factors, then ask your question and wait for the feedback. I will often say, I have an idea. Could you work this up for me as a business proposal? That's all you need to do. It will go through every aspect. It'll even add a marketing plan or a feasibility study. Never work on an idea unless you've done the feasibility part of it at the beginning. If it's not going to make you money, don't even think about it. You have better things to do with your life than to start something that's going to scoop up your whole life and give you nothing back. AI is really an efficient way of getting from A to B with research at your fingertips. You might want to ask, is anyone else doing this? It will give you optimum pricing. It will give you the competition, pitches, marketing plans, proposals, all the kinds of things you would take a lot of time to put together and investigate if you're looking at the viability of a business yourself. You just have to ask good questions that go in the direction you want to go. Make sure you put good information in and ask really focused questions. And if you don't like the answers, say, no, can you try that again? I need more information around this, or feedback around this, or some more ideas. Certainly it's not perfect, and it does sometimes make mistakes, so you can't opt out. You do have to have your wits about you. I've found it even to do calculations incorrectly. That may have been my instructions, of course. And I'll call it on it, and it will say, you're right, and it does a recalculation. So it does know how to apologize. I have a mentor at the moment, and she often says to AI, don't make stuff up. I have another mentor in the past who used AI to co-write a book. Ask it what it can help you with. That may open up a whole new area you haven't even considered. So my single answer to your question, Owen, is to go and have a play with AI and see what you can come up with. You'll be surprised, I think, and pleased with the results. If you've always dreamed of having a researcher and a personal assistant, this is your opportunity. Okay, our next question is from Olivia. She says, is there really such a thing as the one, or are we just choosing who to do life with? The idea of the one is wildly romantic, Olivia. One perfect person who holds the key to your heart and who just happens to live in the same lifetime, same country, same town, and who's just crossed your path. That's quite a logistics miracle. I don't have a problem with miracles, of course, but let's look a bit further. I think there are many ways to find love and many types of love. A deep and abiding affection is love. Seeing someone across a crowded room and just knowing that they are the one is love or can be love. Knowing somebody for years, then moving into a different kind of connection with them can be love too. You may have had one or more of these experiences. I think that for many of us, it would be a dream to meet somebody when you are at the right time for you, who's a great match for you, and to love that person for the rest of your life, happily ever after. I don't know how often that actually happens, not as often as we'd like. To identify love, I think you need to know yourself. You need to know what satisfies you, what you need, and what you really want, because you may be happy with a love that's deeply companionable, reliable, steady and true, without any of the drama and fireworks that falling deeply madly might involve. I think people can be wooed into love. I've seen it. Somebody gets a fix on you and turns on the charm and the focus and the attention. That's kind of irresistible. That may pull out a corresponding emotion from you, and not just emotion in the moment. It may pull out love. But I've seen it where that kind of attention dries up or runs out for the recipient because it doesn't actually come from within them. It's a love of response. My thought about that is that when the going gets tough, which it inevitably does at some point or other in our lives, in our relationships, we have to have enough love in us to carry us over. Sometimes one person in the relationship needs to have enough love in the moment to hold the two of you. You cannot be dependent on how someone is with you, because people have bad days, they have bad weeks and months. People get slack, they don't pay attention, they don't try, they forget what they committed to, and at that time the other person has to be the strong one, or it all falls apart. If you are responding to someone with love, make sure it's coming from the core of you and not just responding to their love for you, their delivery of love to you. I don't think we can say there's only one person for us in romantic terms. We can maybe, but in reality, no. But whatever kind of love you have and whatever your expectations of love in your life are, you must be able to look at that person you've chosen to have forever after, look at them in the eye and say to them, not just you'll do, but for me, you're the one. Ask yourself, would you want someone to say less than that to you, Olivia? I don't think so. You are worth that, and so is the person who's asking you to love them. They also need someone to say, you're the one, the only one for me. Of course, if you want to go a little bit further and apply my Edna from The Incredibles philosophy to this, you would say to them, darling, you're the only one for me in the known universe until the end of time. That will do it. Okay, our last question today is about romance. It's from Odette. As our given radio names today all begin with the letter O, for confidentiality of those people writing in. She says that she laments the lack of romance in life today, where everything is so practical and so, in inverted commas, equal. And she pines for the old-fashioned way of things, as romance seems to have died. How, she says, can this be rectified? Because frankly, she just wants to live in a romantic bubble. She has a partner who she loves, but he just doesn't do the romantic things she wants. What can she do? Here's a quote I like. Romance is the poetry of everyday life. I think that can apply across the board, whether you're talking about a couple or just romance in the big sense of the word. And I don't think romance dies. It might fade a little bit, might have a little lie down, but sometimes it just needs an invitation or a reminder that it's welcome. Odette, perhaps over a romantic dinner, you could tell your partner that the two of you are going to revive romance in your lives and that it will make him the envy of your friends and his. He'll love that. You need to be romantic yourself. Leave romantic notes for him. Light candles. Put flowers in a vase. Eat dinner at a table you have carefully set and look at each other while conversing over dinner. Wear floaty dresses. That's very romantic. Put a flower in your hair. Wear great underwear. Up your terms of endearment. Encourage past romantic behavior by reminding him, I remember when you, da-da-da-da-da, that was so romantic. Ask him, what was the most romantic thing you have ever done for him? Then do it again. Ask him what he considers romance to be, and ask him what he thinks the most romantic thing in the world is for him. Do you see what I'm suggesting? Tell him you want to live romantically with him, and then start to talk about it and then to do it. Make the whole thing positive. Don't say, "You don't bring me flowers anymore." Say, "I see peonies are around at the moment. What beautiful flowers they are." Then give him a smooch and say, "I'm just giving you little romantic prompts, darling." Little fun, obvious, playful games are okay to play with men. They like it. If they're clear that that's what they are. But don't get into convoluted ones, because they don't think like us and they won't know what you're doing. Simple reminders will convey what you want. Apparently God did not make men with the talent of reading our minds. I'm not sure why he left that off the list, but don't expect mind reading, because you won't get it. There are only 3 men in the world who can do that, and I don't know where they are. If I did, I would not be telling. Encouragement builds habit. That speaks for itself. Encourage, encourage all the time. Romanticize your own life. Don't wait. Wear perfume to dinner. Put flowers in the bathroom. Light candles when you have a bath. Romance begins with you, and it's contagious. Let's look at this from the other point of view. If you're a man, and this is your question too, here's what you can do. Ask her what she considers to be romantic, then do it. It's not about grand gestures, although women do love a grand gesture. It's about meaningful ones. As you're walking home, you might pick a flower and present it to her. That is romantic. Surprise her. Put a note in her pocket or bag. Buy her a treat on the way home. Tiny, thoughtful acts work. Listen, because it matters. When she speaks about romance, don't hear complaint, hear desire. She wants to love and be loved well. Make time together feel special. Turn your phone off. Take her on a date for no reason. Be present. That's romantic. Employ all of your 5 senses. 6, if you're in touch with that one. Lastly, let yourself be soft as a man. Romance isn't about losing power, it's about sharing love, and that's one of the most wonderful masculine traits. Set the expectation for yourself and your partner, Olivia. Decide you're going to live romantically and then make that happen. Men have so many great qualities, but I do think it's up to women in their life, the women in their life, to draw that out and encourage it, because romance doesn't come naturally to all men. I find it thrillingly romantic when a man vacuums. Quite irresistible. Well, those are our questions for today. Please do send in any more questions you have to us, either to admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz or to me under the contact tab at margotunlimited.com, Margot with a T. We love to hear from you, and you can ask anything, about life, about love, health, wealth, harmony, you name it, we cover it. So much of life, as you can see from the previous questions, is about connection. Romantically, at work, with our families, with the rest of the people in our community and on the planet. I'd like to share with you a power blessing for connection. If you're feeling alone or a bit lonely, this is a good one to remind you that you are connected to everyone else on this planet and that you are never, ever alone. Connection. I'm so grateful to understand and know without doubt that I am truly connected to my fellow man. I grant myself a lifetime of deep and meaningful connections with those around me, in my close sphere, and those whose lives I touch, because we are all connected to each other. This connectivity enriches my life and strengthens its value and significance. Well, that was just from me. Now we're going to finish with the Word, which is our message today from the universe. We are still working on the smooth operation of the app we've created for the Word, where people can go in and ask their own questions of the universe, then press a button and wait for the universe to guide you to the answer it wants you to have to that question. It's pretty amazing. I just love it. And I know that once we get it over the few technical glitches that we're dealing with at the moment, it'll be available for people to have a look at and get some guidance, inspiration, and encouragement. This message today is quite a long one, but it's very powerful. You are energetic beings. That is how you begin and how you operate and who you are. That is the only thing that should concern you, your energetic state and resonance. Now you must each look into yourselves and ask yourself where you have not been resonant with what you say you want. Look at why you want it, and then look at how having the thing you want will make you feel. Why do you seek to feel like that? If what you want is coming from a place of lack, then that is why your desires have not manifested. If it has an underlying motivation of fear, that is why you have not been able to accept what I am offering. Do you see that? You may feel like you are pursuing and seeking, but I am telling you that it is in fact me who is offering and you who must be resonant in order to receive. Do you get that? Now, go digging and ask yourself why you want what you want, because that underlying fear or lack, and those are the only two reasons, are why you have not yet got what you want. When you face them and banish them properly, you will see your lives ignite like a match to a fire. That was long, but I think it's cool and it's very insightful. I hope it's helped someone who's listening today. Thank you for your company. See you next time.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.